kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
E3.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Bunch of reviews this episode. Not a lot of news going on because we're in the middle of E3, and we're going to save all that good shit until our Friday episode. But until then, we got the reviews, and we are kicking the show off with CJ and Cole Martin both here. How are you two doing?
Pretty good.
I was going to wait and see how long it took you to go first. Okay.
I figured out what you were doing. I'm on to you.
Just a minute and a half of silence before.
That would be great.
Guys, hello?
Neither of us want to say how we're doing first, so.
So before we get to the reviews, are you guys excited for E3? Shit is happening. It is going on now.
Yeah. I'm really excited for today because we're recording this right before Microsoft stuff.
I know. I am so the rumors are going around that Scorpio is going to be $500,
which is actually completely reasonable considering that's how much I spent on mine. Granted, it came with a Kinect, yeah. But still, I mean, I would take that.
I asked my best friend who is Xbox. He loves his Xbox, but he's not like Xbox everything. And I was like, at what point would Scorpio be more than you'd be just be like, no, that's not worth it? And his cutting point with what little he knows, he doesn't follow the news on it or anything, but little he knows about it, he's like, $499 would be my breaking point. He's like, I paid pretty close to that for my original Xbox, so $499 would be my breaking point. So I kind of hope it doesn't surpass that. Because I think
I'm hoping not either. I mean, with the initial hardware specs revealed, I was legit thinking like $799 just because of the actual hardware being so powerful. Yeah. But there's no way they would go that much. It's not that it would be unreasonable for the system. It would just be nobody would buy it. Because at that point, it's just a PC with an Xbox skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't look at consoles as something that they're going to plunk that much money down for. Yeah. So they even with the original price for the Xbox One, I waited. I was like, look, I want Xbox. I love Xbox. I want to upgrade, but that's just not, I can't afford that. And even at $499, I have to go, well, I'm going to have to wait till tax time, you know?
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I wound up doing. Which just happened to wind up perfectly with Titanfall's console coming out. So.
Titanfall.
Yeah. It was smarter to wait anyway. You get a game with it for the same price that you normally would pay for the system alone.
So I was a day one. It's smart to wait a little bit. I was a day one buyer. I have my day one achievement.
I wish I could have been. I wanted to be,
but I couldn't afford it.
I have a legit day one achievement. That was redeemed on day one because I bought the system day one instead of one of those assholes who bought the achievement card off of eBay and they're like, ew, look at me. I redeemed this in June.
I really don't see the point in that. It's not like it's worth any gamer score. It's just a little badge, basically. No, but I think I will be day one for Scorpio. I wonder if they're going to have a separate achievement for that.
I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. Again, and who knows? The price could be different because the rumors come from Jeff Keighley, who, if anyone is going to know shit, it's going to be him. And he said that the $499 price was what was talked about during the show rehearsals. It is very possible that they could have rehearsed at that price, and the show comes along, and they're like, $449 or $399, who knows?
Yeah. That would be insane at $399. Like, but they did just drop the Xbox One S, I think, permanently.
No, it's a one-week price drop, and it's only like select bundles that are down to $199 for like a week.
And I think yours is also funny because
I had... my friend that I was talking about before, me and him had made a bet, and I was like, look, I said, the consoles are $249 right now, and I said, I want to bet money that they will go down to $199. He's like, no, he said, maybe $225, but I don't see $199. That shit popped up $199, and I sent him the link immediately. I said, I was right.
Hey, you motherfucker.
Because he hates anything in the world. There's nothing he hates more in the world than have to admit that I was right about something. So when I am, I'm like, yeah! And then I just make it worse.
Oh, man. Always good. Well, are you guys ready to jump into things? We could save the rest of the E3 speculation and news and all that other fun stuff until... What? What'd you say?
Well, there would be no speculation at that point on Thursday. It would just be what happened.
True. Like all the news and all the wrap-up stuff. But, Cole, what did you say?
I didn't, like, it vibrated when my sister sent me a message. No. Normally I have it turned off to not do that. And so that was, like, up against my ear, and I'm like, ah! Sorry. I think it picks up on your guys' end when it does it, too. And she's liable to send, like, 27 messages in a row. I love her, but she'll send, like, 27 messages in a row.
Well, anyway, we're going to kick things off with the game debuting on Xbox after being on PS4 for a while. So, going with all the Xbox talk, here's an Xbox game, Plutobi, the Dwarf Planet, developed and published by Zynus. It released June 1st on Xbox One for $14.99, previously available on the PS4. Plutobi, the nickname of Pluto, was kicked out of the planet list in 2006 and became a dwarf planet because he is so small and weak. So he decided to show his power to other planets in the solar system, absorb many asteroids, and become stronger. Also defeat about 60 planets, moons, and mega asteroids to show his power. The both of you play this one, and I'm eager to hear your thoughts on it. So flip a coin and pick who goes first.
PlayStation can have it back.
Whoa. Wow.
Wow.
All right. That was rude. And not at all.
But it was just...
Let's start with CJ, because I know Chris Taylor covered it previously on the PS4, and he seemed to really enjoy it. Cole, it seems like you're not a fan. CJ, what do you think? We'll start with you.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, Joe. Well, Plutobi is a interesting concept that would be a lot of fun if it wasn't so difficult. And the difficulty isn't because of the actual, it is because of the game, but it's because it's confusing, not because it's actually hard. The game has, like, a rock, paper, scissors, and a fourth item kind of setup, where it's, like, the asteroids each have a different element, and you have to try to absorb the asteroids to gain mass, but you have to be able to pick the perfect element that you have on you at the time in order to combat the element that the asteroid has, and that just becomes confusing. Especially because they'll send like 40 asteroids at you at once at some points, and it's just like, what the hell am I supposed to do with all this? So that kind of makes the whole game just a lot of frustration and like trying to figure out exactly what you're supposed to do, and then you just spam buttons and mess up and die because you don't know which element you're supposed to have. It would be a lot easier if perhaps if you could just select the element that the asteroid is, and then just go with the same element on your character, and you'd be able to combat it that way. But you have to use a different element, so it makes it a lot more confusing and difficult to actually play. And it's just that makes it not as fun as it could be.
Mm.
I'd like to point something out. True Achievements says that only 3 people have unlocked the achievement for beating the first level.
Interesting.
So I did.
The controls make the game 370 times more difficult than it should be. Like, I feel like Plutobi is fun. The concept is really neat. The story is kind of adorable. And you're like, yeah, I can get behind this. And then you start button mashing and die and lose all your progress. Because when you die, you get completely reset for the whole level. This is why I haven't even beat the first fucking level yet, because
that same thing happened to me.
You can, it's like, you can get through it and get to one of the asteroids or one of the bosses if you're lucky enough to make it that far, and then die, and you're all the way back at 1-1 again. So if you don't actually succeed, you lose all your upgrade points, you lose any progress you've made through the levels, you're just shit out of luck.
Huh.
I can agree that the control scheme is interesting and weird. I don't mind, though, that the elements are tied to the face buttons rather than, like, a stick and just changing the element.
I don't mind that part either. I actually thought that was one of the easier parts of it to pick up. It's the using the right thumbstick to navigate with it. That's just...
Jesus, that was really loud. The first... That the last one I didn't hear, that one I did. That was very obvious.
Holy shit.
It's like you were holding it on to your mic.
My bad.
Holy shit.
the movement system, I'll agree, is really weird, but it makes sense because it is in space. There is a lot of, like, I guess, floatiness and drifting because the left stick, which is what... Okay, so I'll say right away, I thought that this was going to be a twin-stick shooter because the left... your movement icon looks like a reticle.
Yeah.
And basically, you push that reticle to move in the direction you want, and depending on how far you move it away from your character, that increases your speed. So, when watching trailers, it made it look a lot like it was a twin-stick shooter. And not some kind of, like, almost Feeding Frenzy style game, except it's a lot more complicated.
The controls are similar to Anoxemia, how you go in the direction of your reticle as opposed to actually controlling the character itself. So, it's just...
Yeah, and that can be confusing, because you'll try to move your character with the left stick, and and you'll push the left stick really far, and then all of a sudden you're moving really far in the other direction, and you'd have to take a lot of time to adjust to where you're going.
I think if it were an open arena as well, that wouldn't even be as big of an issue, but because it's kind of cut out like labyrinths, it intensifies how difficult it is to actually maneuver.
But maneuver aside, I really think that the hardest point just comes down to being able to actually switch to the element you want in order to combat an element that's coming at you. Like, it starts easy enough. Like, if you're on if you see a fire one coming at you, you got to switch to the water element of your character.
Yeah.
And that's easy enough to learn. But then you have metal and soil as the other two elements. And those are like... Those don't make sense. Why are those combating each other? Like, obviously, fire destroys metal, I guess, because it melts it, you know, jet fuel and steel beams and stuff like that. Jesus, and then,
fucking idiot.
And then, but metal defeats soil, which I guess just is like a metaphor for how we've destroyed the Earth with technology, but still, it's not. But no, that's the case. Like, I don't see how metal really defeats soil. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
They're gonna go write that into the description because that's the closest they've got to coming up to explaining it themselves, probably.
You are so freaking rude. Jeez, fire coming out of you. Like, I'm trying to be as nice as possible, and you're just like, this game sucks.
I'm waiting for you two to just start throwing punches.
Right? Come here, bitch. No.
Fuck you.
Good. It just... I think that's why it's disappointing, because it has potential. It's a really interesting game, and it's a really interesting way to play, but it just doesn't work well, and it's complicated.
Okay, but there's one really, really good point. The really, really good point is that the beginning music is probably one of the best songs I've ever heard in a video game.
It's fun.
I let the main music just play for a while. It was so good. The main menu music is incredible. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if there's any good point to give, just go by the soundtrack.
I think if the game wasn't so overly complicated, it would be better as well. But at least the tutorials are really good at explaining in depth if you want to sit and take the 10 minutes to read each screen.
Yeah, they are
fucking insane. You have to, like, take notes. And at least they did, because I bitch about tutorials all the time. I'm like, tutorials are never in depth enough. They're like, here, go jump off this and die. So at least I've got to give it credit for that. I know I'm being harsh on it, but I give it some serious credit for at least explaining its shit. It's overly complicated, but they do a fantastic job of telling you every little detail.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't read the entire thing because there was like 10 pages and they were legit like screen filling pages. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I don't want to read a novel right now. I want to play the game. I read what was important and I skipped the rest. I didn't manage to have that much issues until the boss. The bosses is where it gets difficult, because then it's like you got so many elements coming at you at one time. It just, I didn't know what to do. It was
overdoing. You have to take into consideration too. There's levels to the elements, and so you've got to keep an eye on your level. You got to keep an eye on the level of the asteroids that are flying at you, at the level of the boss you're trying to.
Oh yeah, there's levels too. Yep. There is also levels. Not even, so even if you match it correctly,
just change it. You're still going to get fucked if it's bigger than you.
Yep. Even changing the elements is not always going to help. It'll just reduce the amount of damage you're going to take.
It's a good concept. There's a lot of good in it. I know I'm being harsh, but there's good in it, but there's just a lot of overcomplication and poor controls that just rain on its parade.
But holy shit, the game is cute.
It is really cute. And the colors, you can't be mad at bright colored games. We don't get enough of them. Everything has been green and gray for so long. So when you do see one that's cute and brightly colored and well drawn and kind of cartoony, you want to be like, hey, this is different.
You guys are like bipolar reviewers, how you jump from something good to something bad to something
good. As much good as bad.
He's trying to counter me. This is a new new segment for the show that you can introduce, and it's just Cole versus CJ. Cole
always wins. We should have did that for the Little Acre.
Oh, God. I have to get the two of you on the same game a lot more often. I know overall, Cole, you mentioned that it only showed like three people beating the one level on True Achievements. I'm wondering if the True Achievements, like, information or scraping the data is accurate, because neither of you show up on the game list for True Achievements.
Yeah, because we didn't beat the first.
Yeah, if you have to get an achievement in order to show up. Mm. If you haven't got an achievement, the initial achievement too on Xbox says only 6%. So I would assume that's pretty close to the three.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty insane.
I think only two or three achievements for the game as a whole have been unlocked. And there's...
Yeah, only two.
To get the achievements, there's achievements for beating, but there's also achievements for getting a set score, which is like 700,000 for most of them, but there are a couple, I think, that are a million or even higher. And it's just insanely complicated to get that kind of score. I don't know how... If anybody has completed this game, I will do a backflip. And given my arthritic nature, I don't think there's going to be any point where I'm doing a backflip anytime soon.
All right, so final verdicts. You guys have been going back and forth on this one for a while. I need some final verdicts. What are your thoughts?
You go first, CJ.
Because I'm going to be a little bit nicer than you. I'm assuming I know what rating you're going to give it. But for me personally, I think that the game is cute enough and has good enough music that to buy the soundtrack. And then for the game itself, I'd have to give it a hesitant try it. I don't think that it's bad enough that it shouldn't be played. I just don't think it's good enough to actually recommend. I think if you want to give it a shot yourself and you've been looking at it for a while, maybe it's worth checking out. $15 isn't a horrible price for the game. It's fair enough.
Yeah, I really disagree. I was just about to say, too, I was like, wait, what's the price? So maybe I could save it with a fuck it, why not? But then you said 15, and I'm like, no, don't. Just skip it. I'm sorry.
I knew Eterna would give it a denial.
I feel bad. Just deny it. You've got to be really desperate for something different to play to plunk $15 on this one. I'm sorry.
So we had Chris Taylor, if I recall, I think he gave it a buy it. CJ gave it a try it. And Cole gives it a deny it. So this one game has covered all of the ratings.
That's pretty funny.
I feel like I'm always the harshest critic. Damn it.
You are. I think I've given more deny it's than you have, though. I think I've given like 3 or 4 in my lifetime.
No, I'm definitely up to like 5 or 6 at this point.
Oh, wow. Okay, really? Never mind.
Yeah, I think so. Are you really that high?
I don't remember.
I can think of 3 just off the top of my head.
What deny it's have you given?
I didn't remember any.
I think I gave a deny it. Uncanny Valley. Now I've lost it. Shit, there was another one.
I thought Uncanny Valley, I was here and you gave it a try it.
I might have. Maybe then. Maybe I've been a little more lenient with the hesitance.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You always got the term hesitant. If you throw it in front of anything, hesitant, deny it. There you go. Now it's like, it's not as bad as a normal deny it. It's like a hesitant deny it. Like, maybe you should deny it.
It's not an emphatic deny it.
I mean, you know, rule of thumb, I think that there's games that there's somebody that's going to enjoy everything. Every game is going to end up being somebody's favorite, just because there's just so many different people and people want different things out of games. But when one that is so difficult to play, then I'm more inclined to be like, look, it's just hard for no good reason. Then maybe you just need to let it go.
Cool. All right, so CJ, are you bouncing now, or are you hanging around, or what are you doing?
I'm going to combat her next review, even though I don't think I've played the game.
Okay, well, I'm doing one next, so I get to talk.
Okay.
Next game to talk about is called Jump Stars, developed by Pixel Blimp, published by our friends at Curve Digital, released June 6th on PS4, June 9th on the Xbox One and Steam for $9.99. Jump Stars is a 2-4 player party game that blurs the lines between cooperative and competitive play. Work as a team to beat the show, but there can only be one winner. Who will turn on who first? This is a pretty unique take on a party game. You need to have 2-4 players. There is no single player mode in this. There is no online play. This is 100% couch co-op competitive party crazy madness. Clearly, I don't have cats to play with because they can't use controllers yet. But thankfully, my wife sat down with me and we put some time into it. And then a friend came over and we played a little bit more. It starts off where all the players are trapped in some kind of crazy, insane game show, and you have to beat the game show to escape. And to do that, you and your, partners, for the lack of better word, since, you know, you have to get along for part of it, you are going to play through 4 different mini games where, you know, it could be things like dodging hammers that are coming from the ceiling, or standing, or what the hell was it? Like standing on little ice plates in an area that's just getting hotter and hotter. So if you're on fire, you end up burning up and losing. But you also have to work together to step on colored tiles on the floors to earn points, and you have to earn a set number of points to, I guess, complete the stage. And then from there, it's whoever lasts the longest wins the majority of the points. And it's like the winner gets like 50% of the points, the second place gets like 30, and then 20. It's staggered out. So you clearly want to be the winner in each game, but you have to work together. Whoa, I just got
some feedback.
What'd I do?
I don't know. I got an echo somewhere.
Yeah. I heard it too. Is he still doing it?
Probably CJ's fault.
Yeah. No, I heard a tiny bit again.
But you have to work together to beat the four stages, which will unlock a fifth gauntlet, which is basically, you know, last as long as you can to escape the game show. In terms of, like, story, there's not much in the way of story. It's just a game for friends to come together, work together for a bit, and then fuck each other over as much as possible at the end. A decent variety of mini-games. They have a handful of variants on a lot of them with different stage layouts and stuff like that. They have a mode where you can select whatever games you want, kind of like a free play, if you want to go that route, where you could pick anywhere from 1 to 10 different games. Achievements in the game, because CJ, I know you like this stuff. A lot of grindy stuff of, like, jumping thousands of times or punching thousands of times.
Yeah, I was looking at that.
It's something that is meant to be completed by playing with friends over a stretch of time, not marathoning it in a night, which I know you enjoy doing.
I can play a long game. I did evolve.
Yeah, but then the downside is that, like I mentioned, this is multiplayer only, no single player mode at all, and it is local only. So if you don't have friends to play with, you've got to pass this one up. There's just no reason to get it if you don't have people to play with. If you routinely have game nights or company over, I think it's definitely worth checking out. I would give it a solid try. It's a lot of fun. There's not a lot of depth to it, but, you know, not every game needs to have a crazy amount of depth. It's just fun to get friends together, and it's like a throwback to the old N64 GoldenEye days, or like Smash Brothers or Mario Kart, where you just have four people playing and someone's going to get punched by the end of it. There will fists will fly and people will laugh. Blood might be shed.
That's one of those you play if you don't want to keep the friends you've invited to play.
Pretty much. It's friend Alienator 2000. But yeah, it's a cool game, cool concept. It just, if you don't have friends, there's no point.
Yeah, I can understand that. There's a lot of... It's basically any game like that, though.
Yeah.
If you don't have friends, there's no point.
True. Very true.
So make some fucking friends already.
Very true. All right, next game to talk about is called Perception, developed by the Deep End Games, published by Feardemic. It released May 31st on Steam, June 7th on Xbox One and PS4 for $22.99. Interesting price. Caught in a deadly game of cat and mouse, a young blind woman depends on her razor-sharp hearing to solve an ancient mystery and survive the forces that pursue her. Cole, this one is horror-ish, and we always call on you for those, so tell us about Perception.
Perception is incredibly well done. We've seen games try to take on the a character that is blind before, but this is the first time where they just straight up take the approach of everything is blacked out unless you use Cassie's ability to use echolocation by tapping her cane. And even still, you don't get a full view of what's in front of you. You just get like a little misty outline that kind of glows to show you, you know, what's in the immediate vicinity. So basically the way sounds react around her is the way that she sees, and that is the way that you see in the game. So if you tap the cane, and you might get an outline that shows that there's you know, like a mug sitting on a table or what have you. So before I even get into the story aspects of the game, the main character, Cassie, the first option that the game gives you is to decide how much Cassie is going to talk while you're playing. You can choose for her to be quiet and only speak in moments that are pivotal to progressing the story, or you can choose for her to be a little wordy. And I picked the wordy option because I thought that this would kind of help me and maybe make the game a little easier. She'd give me hints and tips as we were going along. It turned out that really she just gets kind of sarcastic and makes little weird quips throughout the game. They don't help you at all. She just turns into a snotty teenager. And I was like, I've already got one of these, but you can't go back in and turn it back off when it's not
suitable. So you had to deal with the smart ass the whole game?
Yeah, so I was like, yeah, I'm going to go flip the switch, turn this back off. Now, Cassie has traveled to a mansion that she has been seeing in visions and nightmares. She's, to her knowledge, she's never been here before, but she's just haunted by this mansion in her dreams, and she needs to explore it and experience it. So the game begins with Cassie outside of the mansion, and the wind is howling, the snow is blowing. Doesn't seem overwhelmingly terrifying, except for that you're approaching this big giant house that you can only see vague outlines of. So the whole tension and scare of it initially is really just kind of you psyching your own self up. Like, how am I going to see what I'm doing when there's only the outlines of stuff? And this is an unfamiliar place for her. What are you going to do? So you'll start to rely on tapping your cane to get the little burst of vision to know where things might be. The problem is that once you're in the house and you start exploring, the tenants of the house can hear those cane taps, and they will come get you, and they are not friendly, and they are not alive.
Ew.
So the house is haunted. Hashtag too spooky. The house is haunted. Not all of the ghosts are nefarious. Some of them are a little more benign. Some of them are more stuck in like an echo of the past, if you will. And Cassie can trigger those echoes, you know, by performing certain tasks. In one instance, the one ghost is playing out a scene where in life she was pregnant and she had morning sickness, and she asks for the morning sickness pills, but I've left them in the car. So Cassie has to trudge out into the snow and stuff and go get the morning sickness pills for the pregnant ghost's vision that she's having. Whoa. Did you hear him?
Yeah.
You can always hear them. So she has to trudge out and carry on these tasks that help progress her through the story, so that she can uncover that not everything that happened in the house in the past was as it may have seemed, including the pregnant wife and her psychiatrist husband, who may or may not have been disbarred for doing questionable practicing. As the story progresses, some of the ghosts, you know, become a little more troublesome. But if Cassie is caught, the game will just like kind of teleport you back to the beginning of the house and like the foyer area. So it's not overwhelmingly problematic in any way that you get caught. Like, it's not a huge loss, which is a good thing, because it's easy to get lost in the house when you can't have any kind of visual cues as to where you are.
Yeah.
Because eventually the walls with blank paintings just all become the same, and there'll only be tiny little things that you might pick up on that can be like, oh no, this isn't the way I need to go, I need to turn around and go back, or whatever. But it can be a little easy to get lost. Fortunately, for some inexplicable reason, Cassie does have the ability to use like a sixth sense, where you can pull the left trigger and it will make your objective glow. But if you are far away from it, good luck. because you have no idea how many walls or doors are in between you and that objective and like what path you need to actually go.
Yeah.
And I've actually not even made it as far in the story as I normally would like for a review because I'm stuck in one part where I'm just really far away from my objective and I keep roaming around and getting lost and finding other things that I want to mess with instead before I actually get there. So if it were a little easier to have some kind of idea how far away you actually are from that item as opposed to just, hey, look, it's small and it's way in the upper right corner of the screen. Mm. You know,
I have a question. Have you played the game Beyond Eyes at all?
No, I've wanted to, and I've seen like videos and stuff for it, but I haven't actually got to play it.
I was curious to see how this one stood up to that, since they're both pretty much about blind people trying to maneuver around in a world they pretty much can't see.
Yeah. With my experience, though, with what I've seen of Beyond Eyes, at least when you're in an area, you have color and like actual outlines and stuff of what's around you. So you can kind of at least note what you're passing through and what have you. With perception, you don't have that luxury. Like, this is a huge mansion with sitting rooms and bedrooms and what have you. And it's easy to be like, oh, well, there's a radiator. There's another radiator. Wait, is that the same radiator I passed 10 minutes ago? Did I just go in a circle? It can be a little frustrating, but on the bright side, there are collectibles and tapes and stuff. So at least while you're taking this time to explore, because you're lost and you're kind of forced to explore, at least there's things that are still progressing the story for you. Because if you can, there's tape recorders set up throughout, which have been left behind front by the psychiatrist doctor. Describing his tests and procedures, and so you're at least getting that part of the story.
I love collectibles like that, where it's just some guy was recording a voice memo and left it, and he's like, well, I lost my thing, I'm not gonna bother looking for it, let me just buy another one, leave that somewhere. I lost two.
They're all left on tapes, and so it's not like there's just random tapes laying around. There's actual tape recorders. Just sometimes there will be two or three in one room, and you're like, this guy had quite the affliction for tape recorders.
He bought stock.
Yeah, like I would guess there's easily a dozen of them in the game.
And he had prime pantry with those.
The dash button.
I'm out of tape recorders.
I'm out of tape recorders again.
The game was backed on Kickstarter, and so there are backer tapes as well. And like, if you can find these hidden rooms, there's another tape recorder with another recording. And you're like,
yeah, but at least it's left by each person instead.
Yeah. But then you gotta go, well, somebody put the tape in the tape recorder, and maybe the tape was by the backer, and the tape recorder was just a spare that the doctor had hanging around. And I think there's five of those. And you're like, it's a little quirky, but it's forgivable. Maybe the ghosts are just randomly finding the tape recorders and putting the tapes in them for you. I don't know. But it does at least help. And again, even if you can't tap your cane in some areas because the ghost will come after you, there's other things you can use. Like, there are TVs that if you turn on the power to a TV, then the sound from the TV helps with the echolocation for that little certain area. Mm-hmm. Again, the radiators that I mentioned before, they leak. They make a sound. So she can see around the radiators because of the sound that they make. And even if you are kind of over tapping your cane and drawing a little attention to yourself, the house gives you plenty of warning that it's kind of getting a little pissed off at all your noise. So like there's like creaks and groans that you'll hear long before the ghosts actually come after you. So once the house starts to let you know it's a little pissed, you can be like, yeah, I'm sorry. I won't tap the cane. I'll just sit here in the dark for a few seconds. And then you can carry on your way. And there are some rooms where it gets pissier a little faster than the other rooms where you can just sit there and like bang on the metal railing if you want to and it doesn't care. But at least it gives you fair warning. And again, even if you do overdo it, I know I read some people were kind of using it as a fast travel to get back to other parts of the house faster because it would just bring you back to the foyer.
Death warp.
And so you have to backtrack all the way back to that area. You could just get a ghost.
Oh, so it doesn't like remove any progress if you get caught?
No.
Okay, that makes
just resets where you were in the house. So it's not damning to take your time, and if you really want to make a bunch of racket and explore everything.
Death warping, gotta love it.
Yeah, the worst you're going to do is get, you know, teleported by a pissed off ghost. So basically they're kind of trying to not so friendly show you the door by literally pointing you to
the door. Get the fuck out. So I got to know, for $22.99, what's your verdict on this one?
Buy it. This is fun. It's just fun to explore. It's not overwhelmingly spooky. There's not a lot of jump scares or anything. I did jump a couple times. I was like, you know, because everything is dark, and then something will just be kind of lurking in the shadows when you tap your echo location, and you're like, I'm going to pretend I didn't see that. So that creepy thing in the corner is totally not going to eat my face today, you know, but it's fun. It's enjoyable. It's really creative. I wish I could have managed to get to the end, but like I said, I was just struggling with some of the navigation. It's not the worst thing. It's forgivable. At least you can explore while you're trying to find whatever the fuck you've got glowing in the corner that you can't get to. So, I mean, I still give it a buy it, just despite that.
Sounds good. CJ, did you want to critique her at all?
No, it's hard to critique when I haven't played the game. I assume it's pretty good, though. Also, to make point of the weird price tag, I assume it was just given a price in England and then, or in the UK, and then it was just translated to US dollar for us.
Good enough.
I kind of like when they do that a little better, though. It feels a little more fair. I mean, the odd price tags are kind of a pain in the ass, but at least you know you're paying the same price as everybody else.
Exactly. It's not bad.
All right. Well, thanks to the two of you for joining for those reviews. I will let you get going, and have a good
E3.
You too. Thank you for putting up with us.
Good
and
stuff.
Thank you to Plotubi or Plutobi.
You can't even say the game name.
Plotubi.
Oh, you're the worst. But thanks again to the two of you, and it is time to move on. Next game to talk about is called Canarium, developed by Zoetrope Interactive, published by Iceberg Interactive, released June 6th on Steam for $19.99. Canarium is a chilling Lovecraftian game which follows a gripping story involving four scientists and their endeavor to challenge what we normally consider to be the absolute limits of nature. Inspired by H.P. Lovecraft's novella At the Mountains of Madness, but largely set after the original story, Steam game, horror game, who better to get on the case than our friend Ryan Underwood. Wood, welcome back to the show. It's been a while. We've missed you.
Yeah, it's I had some training I had to go to recently, so that took a lot of my time. But now I'm back. I could do reviews again, so that's good.
Yay!
Yeah!
It's always good having you on. Always, always good.
Thank you.
As CJ's microphone had a fuck up there again.
It's what it is, man.
Exactly. This guy understands it.
Yeah. The technology just does that. It sucks. So speaking of technology. So yeah, this is a very Lovecraftian type story, which I remember like talking about a lot because I haven't actually read any of the Lovecraft stories, but I'm really familiar with a lot of the tropes that sort of story is. And this takes it in really heavy to the point where I feel the horror is based solely on how much your knowledge of Lovecraft stories are, which I do find unfortunate, because as far as like scares go, I didn't really feel too jumped out, except for when a couple times where I see my own character's reflection, I actually jumped.
Oh shit, it's just me.
Oh, it's me. Oh wow, I feel foolish. Yeah, it's, as far as like building atmosphere, it does a pretty good job of that. I do like the fact that it goes with the disjointed type of storytelling, where all of a sudden you're jumping from one location to another time you don't even know when or where. I assume something about the 1980s. Somewhere about the 1970s, 1980s. I'd say about that time frame. It's a Battlestar Galactica kind of aesthetics, if you will. But nice. But it does a lot of the same tropes of the mankind trying to, you know, go beyond the veil that they're in. But I feel like it kind of falls just short, though. It's almost got it. And it's a really weakest part is the voice acting. It's almost there, but it's not. And it's not enough, unfortunately. And I think that does hurt the presentation altogether. And that's unfortunate because, hey, when you're doing essentially escape room type horror game, your voice acting is incredibly important for telling a story.
Yeah.
It just wasn't there. It's just so frustrating.
Yeah, sounds like it has the atmosphere there. It's just the voice acting takes you out of it, I guess.
It does. Which is unfortunate. And also, you don't really get a sense of danger. I mean, there's games like Layers of Fear. Again, like, there's no risk of failure. You just got to figure it out, right?
Yeah.
But it does such a better job of like building up that I was about to say obvious, but the atmosphere, that the existential dread, like something's going to go horribly wrong anytime you make it like a sudden movement. And while it's there in this game, it's just it kind of just misses some marks. And the big thing I remember was later on in the game, you get essentially, you're familiar with like the boon, right? Which is an item that's given to a hero that allows it to progress through the entire game, right?
Yeah.
Well, there is a boon in this game that gets reused a few times, but the problem is, like, for some reason, I didn't quite catch that part of it. It's basically you have to pick up, because you're told to like pick up the stone, put it in a scepter. It's like, oh, cool, can clear away all these vines. And for some reason, like, I didn't catch that. Oh, I'm supposed to pick that back up and carry it with me in order to progress through the rest of the game. Actually, legitimately through the rest of the game. I didn't get that, unfortunately. So it was a little bit frustrating on that aspect. Some of the puzzles, I mean, the puzzles were legitimately just, thankfully, it's still easier to miss, because miss is like one of the worst adventure games out there as far as puzzles.
Yeah. But
puzzle solving in this game was always just find a room, find a puzzle, don't know how to figure it out, go back to a room you missed, your character writes down the solution, sort of, and writes down the notes, and then use those notes to solve the puzzle. So I would say it's not too, but every puzzle was just like that, too. I did like the fact that it talked a lot about pattern repetition a lot, as far as the puzzles go. Because, I mean, that's all Cthulhu technology is. It's just, you match this puzzle with another, this symbol with another symbol, and magic happens.
No.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I just wish it did a better job of storytelling. I just wish it was almost there. It was almost there, but I think it just kind of fell away from being able to tell, like, a really good a Lovecraft story. Granted, I haven't read the Mountains of Madness, so there's that.
Yeah. So it's possible you're missing a little bit because of that, but I think it'd be weird for a game to just assume that you read that to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, and the good part about Lovecraft is the tropes are... Well, yeah, another trope. All flashlights are called torches.
Yeah, that, which I guess it's in itself is British.
In itself is not weird, because that's British already, right?
Yeah.
But he's from New England.
New England. It's England, so they keep it over there.
Ah, I don't believe you.
No, over there they still call it torches. In fact, they still call cigarettes the other word too, but I'm not going to say that one.
New England, right?
Yeah. I know what he means. I'm making a joke.
Oh, my bad. Oh, dude, sorry, man.
Jokes are supposed to be funny, though.
Couldn't hear me laughing while I was telling my own joke.
So you find self amusement in things?
Yes, I do. There's no problem with that. Everybody does.
That's fair. Gosh, oh, it's man. God, honestly, like I, as far as this game goes, like. Remember me like really praising both Nevermind and Untold Stories?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, part of the reason is those type of games, like with horror, you got to be, it's got to get in your head. Like, you got to start like really thinking about it a lot. And it's frustrating because here it is, we have Canarium, which is almost there, but not. And then you have Untold Stories and Nevermind, which do it so much better. As far as like legit horror goes, it's I feel like it leaned on Lovecraft a little too much, honestly, and didn't go for like the other rules when you make horror games.
No,
that's a shame because it's almost there. It's I mean you might find more amusement if you're like a total Lovecraft fanboy or fangirl, you might absolutely love this game, and it's. For $20, it's actually a really solid adventure game in itself. It's just for me to criticize it, I feel like it's just almost. It's like the uncanny valley of horror games, really.
Yeah, I've been glancing over some of the other Steam reviews, and it seems like a lot of people are really enjoying it, but everybody keeps coming back to the voice acting.
Okay, so I'm not. It's not me being an asshole. Got it. All right.
Yeah, it seems like people aren't digging the voice work.
Okay.
But yeah, it sounds like a pretty solid adventure. Do you think it's more along like Walking Simulator lines or just straight up adventure?
I'd say Walking Simulator.
Cool.
I mean, so, again, there's nothing wrong with that, obviously.
Yeah. Walksploration.
Walksploration. Yeah, I like that. I like that
term. So, yeah, for $20, what are your thoughts on this one overall?
I'd say try, honestly. Again, like, if you're a hardcore Lovecraft fan, like, I can easily recommend that, but if you're just a horror fan in general, it's... There are better games at $20. We'll just put it that way. Not bad, but yeah, again, it's that voice acting just kind of brings it out.
I gotta say, I was kind of surprised to see a horror game, and on Steam it shows that it's rated E for everyone.
That's weird.
Well, it's not. You gotta keep in mind, like Lovecraft is always kind of like more mindfucks than anything else.
Yeah, it's just it's not often that you see a horror game with just a straight up E rating. Normally, it'd be like teen or E10. So,
and then I have to commend it on that portion because yeah, a lot of horror games they have to put in the risk of violence or actual violence in order to sell the horror aspect of it. But this is just hey, let's just get in your head and just kind of fuck with it a little bit. It's like, hey, how do you feel about reality? Nope, it's not like that at all.
Oh, man. Good stuff. Well, Wood, thank you as always for checking out that game for us. Are you looking forward to E3?
I am. I'm going to have to get the Talking Heads version of it, unfortunately, because, hey, I live in a different country, so
true.
That's what it is. But I'm looking forward to possibly new developments. Hopefully, we'll see... what Namco Bandai is bringing out, because apparently they leaked that they're doing a fucking 3v3 Dragon Ball Z Arxis game.
Yeah.
What the fuck, right?
Yep.
Plus, hopefully we'll find out more DLC from Hopefully Capcom that doesn't bore me to tears. And we'll see like Namco Bandai is doing for their games, because I'm excited because it's supposed to be the 25th anniversary of Soul Calibur.
Yeah.
And so far the biggest announcement they made is that they're doing pachinko machines.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so fucking if you're looking forward to Soul Calibur pachinko, man, are you in luck this year?
It's just the best. I've been wanting to ask you this because I kind of went off on this a couple of episodes ago. The leaked roster for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite showed absolutely no X-Men in the game at all. Like, not even Wolverine. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, it's I don't like leaked lists. Just because it kills the excitement later on, and two, it's anyone can do it. We've all seen it get burned a lot of times. As far as the no X-Men, here's the thing. So while I see it as a Marvel head, where when everything Marvel is a Capcom, you think Ryu and Wolverine easy, right?
Yeah.
The fact that Storm, Cyclops, well, I mean, Cyclops wasn't the last one, but characters like Magneto, Storm, Sentinel, those are all mainstays in the first three games, too. So to not see them is definitely a huge departure. However, I totally understand where they're coming from, because, Disney doesn't want to pay for X-Men licenses. Straight up what it is. And I feel like what we might be able to get out of this is a slightly tighter game, because now we actually have to reach back into the Marvel Cinematic Universe and other characters to kind of fill the voids that those X-Men characters are leaving behind. As far as like the legitimacy of it, it's I'll wait. So we'll see how it is. And again, like even. I'm holding on that this is actually like the one Marvel game that's going to bring me into Marvel games. It's my hopes aren't the highest at the moment. But I mean, worst case, you know, Arxis is doing a DBZ game with 3v3. So, I mean, we'll get a fix some way, right?
True. My opinion was that not having the X-Men in there, like, not even fucking Wolverine has been like the poster boy for the series.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, and to not have them, I feel that it's just not worth buying, especially when Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is out with double the characters, including X-Men, more than half the price cheaper.
It's well, okay. If you're going for a pure price standpoint, yeah, you're right. But for me, like, I don't care about the characters as long as I find one character I can enjoy. And guess what? It was never any of the X-Men characters for me. And you also have to keep this in mind. Marvel's Capcom Infinite is not Marvel 2 and it's not Marvel 3. So what we're going to see more is gameplay at E3 and guarantee it. And, I'm sure I'm going to hear from the FGC that is going to be feeling a lot more like Capcom versus Tatsunoko. Mm-hmm. It's going to have that feel of it. Or, yeah, it's either like maybe like a hybrid between Marvel's Capcom 1 and Capcom versus Tatsunoko. Or Tatsunoko versus Capcom. Wow, I cannot talk right now. Because, I mean, you kind of got this system where it's 2v2, but. Your Power Stone, your Infinity Stone, kind of acts like your Striker from Marvel's Capcom 1. Is like how that operates, right?
No.
So it's still 2v2, but you have that stone that like kind of gives you that third assist. So I think this is kind of
wait.
So
it's a wait and see kind of thing, I guess.
It is. It's Well, I mean, for you, but since I'm a fighting game head, I'm totally buying it.
Kind of figured you would. But,
oh, yeah. No, that's happening.
Anyway, thanks as always for coming to join us, and I guess we will move on with the reviews. next two games to talk about, we're bringing in our good friend Pernell Vaughn is back. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm enjoying this E3 weekend, the festivities. Good stuff going on so far.
I'm completely behind on it. This whole day, it was like, I've been like working in the yard all day, and every once in a blue and I'll pop online and someone will go, Xbox One X, what? And it's like names and stuff. I'm like, well, I'll sit down and digest it all later.
Indeed. But, we'll be going over all that stuff on our next episode. Don't want to dive into it too much now, but is there anything you're looking forward to?
That's the creepy thing about how I feel lately. I don't feel anything to look forward to. I just wait, and if something tickles my fancy, I go, yay, thanks for announcing that. But there's never anything that I'm really looking for, you know? Like, people were always like, 2D Metroid or Castlevania needs to make a return, or I don't know, I want to see more of this game that's still, like, Kingdom Hearts 3 might get a trailer. I was like, stop caring. When it's done, it's done. I'm tired of chasing that freaking ghost.
Well, Kingdom Hearts 3 did get a new trailer, so they were right about that.
Yeah, I figured it would, because that's what they got to do. They got to keep putting the carrot in front of you.
Yeah.
Oh, look, they're still on Mount Olympus. They'll never get the fuck off of it.
It's slated for release in 2023.
Yeah, exactly. Like, next E3 is going to be like, man, Sora gets to the top of Mount Olympus. What's up there? Like seriously, no one fucking cares anymore. They're going to be releasing remasters of the remasters on the PS5. Okay,
probably.
And you saw it already happen. We had, what was it, the 1.5 remix was on PS3. Then the next one was on PS3. And then it was like, you know, we can milk this shit again.
Yep.
Let's do 1.5 and 2.5 on the PS4, and people will rebuy it because apparently it makes a difference for some reason.
See, I'm still shocked that they're not coming to Xbox. I was really hoping that they would finally announce Kingdom Hearts 1.5 and 2.5 for Xbox One today, and there's still nothing. Like, Kingdom Hearts 3 is coming to the Xbox. Shouldn't they also have the other two so people know what the fuck is happening?
I'll admit, I agree with that. That seems kind of bizarre to me. Like, I'm sure they're probably making an excuse. Like, oh, I'm sure they played it on the old systems. But, like, my response to that would be, okay, had to stop you from milking it on the PS3 and PS4.
Seriously. So,
clearly, that's not a good enough excuse. Why not milk it on the other system, too? That way, at least there's a purpose to it. Because these guys, there's a high chance that they don't have access to the other game. Or they weren't playing the old system. Maybe they bought a 360 and stuck with that. Or, you just flat out forgot what they were like because Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, what, 2004? It was like,
they're so old.
They're freaking old games. I was still in college, like my first attempt at college when Kingdom Hearts 2 came out. It was like, you gotta be kidding me.
Let's not forget that when the original Kingdom Hearts came out, it was still Squaresoft.
I didn't even think about that. Holy shit. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it was still Squaresoft. And Enix was a separate company.
Enix had a soul back then.
Anyway, we should probably get to your two games, because I know you've got dinner on the way or waiting or something like that.
It's on the table, but at the same time, my brain still likes to jump. When I can talk about games, I'll get into it.
Indeed.
It's so rare for some reason.
Video games are fun. Anyway, the first game that you're here to talk about is called Neighbor Horde, developed and published by Fermenter Games. It released June 6th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for only $4.99. Neighbor Horde is a couch co-op shoot-em-up where you and your team of friends use toys as weapons and game-changing superpowers to try to survive the attacks of evil robots and zombie Abe Lincolns. This game sounds ridiculous. Pernell, tell us about it.
Well, it's a Horde shoot-em-up, and by virtue of Horde shoot-em-ups, not first-person, you probably already have an idea what you're looking at here. It's top-down shooting. You choose one of four environments, but you only start with one at the start, and you have to earn the others by acquiring tickets, which you earn by playing, making attempts at the stages. So, you choose a friend, and it's just a aesthetic. They don't have special powers individually. And then you start the game out in the middle of the game. And if you're playing by yourself, the game gives you three bots because having multiple players is an important factor in the game because they have a mechanic related to, we'll just call it the I thought this was funny, by the way. Friend zone. You have to stay in the friend zone in order to recover health. So,
I do like that there's bots, because then losers like me and CJ, who don't have friends, could play.
That's where you're wrong, kiddo.
And I was about to say, Ashley, don't say that too soon, because that was one of the things, issues I had with the game. And it's not for them. It's not for them trying. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate they would actually put the bots in and all that. But I'm not sure if a human would make the same mistakes that the bots would make. But you'd find yourself losing, losing to your bots, dropping out like flies on pretty often. Ugh. And here's the problem with it. The reason why I had an issue with it. I feel like by the way the game is designed, you're pretty much more often than not at the mercy of the enemies than the other way around. And what I mean by that is, like, sometimes you'll be in a situation where it's like attempting to dodge or be evasive is almost not going to happen. Like, I spent a lot of time getting swarmed by guys in this game. And yeah, I do know there's a dash button. So if anybody's listening that has played this game or knows about it, it's like, well, you fucking dash. Like, because I don't know, jerk. I know how to dash, okay? Still got ganked on. Still got ganked. So you basically, a lot of the time, I would use the dash button and the evasive shooting and whatnot, but I felt more like my survival was luck a lot of the time before skill. So, but before I guess I'm trailing off, I didn't explain how the game plays yet. So, okay. So you start out, and you and your three bot friends or human friends are sitting down in the middle of the shooting zone, and the game will introduce through roulette your first enemy type. So I'm not sure if you ever played Monster Madness back in the day or not, but it's similar to that, how the game has a plethora of different monster types, and you come from all sorts of walks based on how they design. Like, there's ninjas, and there's feet, because apparently feet are a monster. And robots, I fought angry snowmen, all kinds of stuff. And each round the game will roulette a different monster, and it'll add it to the roster of enemies that can show up in the wave. And after you kill a wave of monsters, the game will go to a new roulette where it will allow you to either get a new weapon type to show up on the map or a new ability. And the abilities are, there's actually some pretty cool abilities in the game. Like, there's some that will increase your max health. There are others that will make monsters catch fire if they enter the friend zone. there are abilities where, like, enemies, people around you explode. There's all kinds of interesting creative abilities. And the weapon types are interesting. There's the marshmallow shooter. There's, like, frisbees. Basically, a bunch of different toys. Like, there's actually toys that are weapons. So that's kind of like how Zombies Ate My Neighbors was, where they took a lot of, like, pretty typical things and turned them into weapons, like water guns and soda cans. There's actually a soda weapon in this game.
Nice.
So, but in every four or five waves, a boss monster will appear. And I'm not sure if the bosses are different between different zones, because I never got past the neighborhood because of the fact that you have to buy them with tickets, and I was buying dumb stuff with my tickets instead, like different character skins. So I never got to the point of earning 250 tickets to unlock Camp Woody. So, which I'm sure is going to be a lot of action in the friend zone at Camp Woody. But what was it? So the first boss I remember fighting was, I'm trying to remember, it was an alien that I fought. And I fought, the wizard. I fought a giant floating wizard head and his wizard friends. And I took them out, and the next boss was an alien, and I never got past the boss after him. So the game itself just gets really frantic and hectic. Though I did, and I liked the weapon designs, the weapon types, and I liked the enemy types, because that's partly why I originally bought Monster Madness. I like when games introduce crazy, weird monster design. You fight a lunch lady. I thought that was cool. My only issue, again, is, like I said earlier, the problem is, like, I felt like the dodging was a little wonky, and I felt more like a lot of my survival was based around, like, more so being lucky than actually being skillful. So that's a hard thing to say there, because it makes your choice in the review kind of complicated, because some could argue that was my skill level, and others would argue, no, that's how the game was designed. It's just you're at the mercy of the game.
Yeah.
So I think I would give this a try in regards to that, because I don't want to be like deny it, and the real issue is of being that I just sucked at the game, you know? So
see, the beauty of this one is in our fuck it, why not range, where, considering it's only $5, is it a game that's good enough that you're like, fuck it, it's $5, why not?
So long as you're looking for that type of game, the Horde shooter, because that's the one other caveat that I think the game has, which is that it's pretty much nestled into a pretty expanded wheelhouse. There's a lot of people there. So a lot of people at this party, and they're all Horde shooting. So with the options that exist out there, this is one of the cheaper ones. So that is definitely a sell in its corner. If you're looking for a couch co-op Horde shooting game, this one's $5.
So, indeed. And I know on at least on Xbox One, there's still another week that it's only $3.99.
Oh, yeah. Give it a shot. That's a big Buford at Checkers. Yeah, just get it.
So, I wish I had a Checkers around here.
Yeah, you would hate to hear me. Then I can walk to Checkers.
Do they, CJ, do they have Checkers out your way?
No.
Or Rallies?
Rallies I've heard of, yes.
Okay.
Rallies and Checkers are the same place. So if you have a Rallies, you have a Checkers.
It's like Hardee's and Carl's Jr. Same thing, just different name.
Yeah, you mainly go there for the fries, honestly.
Where at Rallies, Checkers?
Yeah, both
of them. Their fries are fucking incredible.
And you'd hate to hear this, too, because until June 18th, hey, free marketing! Until June 18th, you can get any size fries that they sell for $1.
That's amazing. They sell Rallies and Checkers fries at Walmart.
Wait, seriously? You can buy them out of the bag?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got some recently, actually. I loved it. Those are good fries.
You want to try them to see how they compare, like if they taste as good as they do it coming straight from the store.
They're not as good as, straight from a Rally's, but they're really, really good.
I need to look into that thing. You should. I can literally walk the Checkers. There's a Checkers literally 5 blocks from my house. Like, I can just walk up there.
That's awesome.
I need to start doing it more, because, again, with that $1 any fry size deal, that's like...
Now, that is crazy.
It was worth.
I'm excited because they just opened, like this week just opened a Hardee's in our area.
Oh, yeah.
Like the closest Hardee's for me prior to this one opening was in Harrisburg, which from Wilkes-Barre to Harrisburg is a solid hour and a half drive.
Are you in Wilkes-Barre?
Yeah.
Wilkes-Barre? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've been up that way here and there. I'm usually closer to Telford, but Telford and Wilkes-Barre aren't that far apart, I don't think.
Well, shit. Next time you're in the area, drop by and we'll go to Hardee's.
Yes! Fries and a burger. Hook it up.
Yeah, and then CJ could just, I don't know, teleport have some it? Panera.
Oh, I'm sorry. So CJ is too good for Hardee's. He's got to get that Panera brand. Well,
he works at Panera. Where I work. He has to. He's only legally allowed to eat Panera bread from now on until he quits.
Oh, wait, you get it for free. Never mind. No,
no, I don't. I get it 50% off. I don't get it for free.
Quote, 50% off.
Only managers get it for free.
Quote, managers get it for free.
CJ's going to work himself up to manager just for that sweet, sweet free meal.
Shit, I was working at Panera, but that's what I'd be doing because their sandwiches are banging.
I mean, they're okay. I don't think they're amazing.
That was the first place I learned that sun-dried tomato pesto was an actual product. So, hey,
we don't have that at ours. I like their bread bowl soups.
I think it's a seasonal thing. I need to try one of those. I haven't tried it.
That's what I do at Panera, the bread bowl. It's all about the bread
bowl. I get literally the same thing every single time. I just get the barbecue chicken flatbread. Because
apparently they don't have sun-dried tomato pesto.
Well, I think that's a seasonal item. Like, you can only get it during certain seasons.
Fucking seasons.
Delicious seasons, what it is. That stuff is delicious. I can't. Oh my god! See, I want one now. Yeah. It's been so long, but it's all coming back.
Anyway, speaking of sandwiches and nothing related to it at all, the other game that you're here to talk about
is Panera Quest.
Yes, it's Illusoria or Illusoria. How do you pronounce it? Illusora. But there's an IA, so I feel like there's an IA at the end.
You know what that means? I've been reading that title this whole time and missing an entire letter.
Illusoria. Well, I feel like there has to be the emphasis on the illu, because I'm guessing illusion.
I think so too. It's like, think like Elizard was the old anime where mysteriously turn up in crazy world and shit's there.
Good
you
stuff.
Know, fantasy, illusion. I'm making up excuses. I don't know why the fuck they call it Illusoria. It's a fancy name. How much did they sell this one for? You got to tell me.
But anyway, it is developed by Under the Bridge, published by our friends at Badland Games. It released May 30th on Steam for $9.99. It is planned for consoles eventually. I don't know if there's any kind of info on that, though. It is a game where players can immerse themselves in a fantasy world full of wonderful characters and terrible monsters, a place where death lurks past every corner and where patience and expertise will be your best allies. So Pernell, or Pernell, for Illusoria.
Let's forget a letter for you in retribution.
Parnell, as CJ likes to say.
Jesus, CJ. Jesus.
Tell us about this game.
Well, I'm glad you said $9.99. I always need to hear that price tag. It helps me with my decisions. But this game is actually pretty cool. It's got that out-of-this-world vibe to it as far as like exploration. You go from screen to screen. No scrolling. Just screen to screen. And
scrolling's for pussies.
As I said, but there are some screens where there's some scrolling involved. I won't say no scrolling. But anyway, you go from screen to screen, and you enter a world that is under siege by someone called the Puppet Master, and you just happen to wake up in the woods, and you don't know why you're there or anything. You're like, don't die. You're running around the woods trying to get from point A to point B. And you might think I'm just being a platypus douchebag with the explanation, but that really is what's going on. You wake up in the woods and you're trying not to die. As you progress, you come across different people who ultimately kind of give you function, focus on where you need to go or how to proceed and progress through the game. But unless you acquire abilities somewhere in the game that I didn't reach yet, you get a pretty basic, you know, repertoire of moves. You can run, you can jump, you can crawl, which is more like rolling in this game. And you can, like, hold on to the edge of ledges and pull yourself up. And that's pretty much all you can do. Oh, you pull levers sometimes. But that's all you can do, and you use those abilities that you have to traverse the environment to get to the reach your destination at any given time in one piece. So, mentioning what you said earlier about, you know, avoiding streams of death or whatever, you are literally doing that. There is death around every corner, and I have hung out with it and had brunch on multiple occasions. It is a brutal game. But not necessarily in a bad way. It's just you got to get used to the controls.
Brunch at Checkers.
Mm-hmm. Brunch at Checkers, straight with death. Hey, how you doing, man? Let me get one of those fries. I'll touch my fries, die. And that's how it goes pretty much on a regular basis. I put my hand in death's fry box way too many times.
Don't touch my fries. Die.
Die. And that's pretty much how that game was for me. But I enjoyed every death. Like, you know the type. You find a moment. Like, I'm going to, you know, boot this up to kind of give it a glance over and then come back to it later and play it. But then what ends up happening is I play the game for 4 or 5 hours trying to progress through it instead, because I'm enjoying it that much. And that, to me, especially when I'm doing reviews, is a good sign of a game. Because, like, it'll be like, okay, I got to schedule this. I got to put some time into this game. And then I might have to do something else later on. I come back to it later. But it's like, nope. I canceled the other thing. I just kept playing this. And that's kind of what happened with the Illusoria. I just kept playing. I wanted to see what happens next. The constant dying, you develop the desire to say, fuck this, I'm going to beat this obstacle, I'm going to pass it. Oh, and one thing I had to mention about these guys, I don't know what it is, I've played tons of games in the past that have had mosquitoes in them. But the mosquitoes in this game, the noise and the sound of them, I was getting legitimately skeeved out by them. Like, I was, you know, the chills you get some when you're around, like insects that make buzzing sounds, or humming sounds. I got that from this game. The mosquitoes were freaking me the hell out. And if they catch you, they pretty much pick you up, they stab you in the head, they fly off with you. It's freaking sketchy. It freaked me out. But I think that's a testament to the game's design, personally, because it made me really not want to be around mosquitoes whenever they showed up on the screen. I wanted to be away from them. And there's a number of other obstacles in the game, too, like stalagmites and mosquitoes and man-eating plants and spikes. Can't have enough of those fuckers. And also, there are like there's a number of different things. I'm not going to just keep rambling different obstacles, but there's a ton of them in the game, and they all fucking hate you. And even the residents are just jerks. You show up, just an example, the first people you meet is like, hey, you stumble across this explorer guy, and he's like, hey, what are you doing here? How'd you survive that collapse of that ruin? Walk with me over here. Guy I never met. Oh, by the way, go get 3 gold gears so we can light our telescope. Get moving, punk. Like, you don't even know who I am. I could just, like, break out into like a murderous rage right now and just wreck you all.
You should. That'll teach them to just take advantage of you when they don't even know you.
Future reference game designers, give me the option to just maul people who just demand tasks of me without my input, because that was some bullshit. Go on to the ruins and find us our golden gears. Why are they even in the ruins in the first place? Why'd you put golden gears in a ruin that your ass cave and go down to get yourself? You want to send some dudes you just met that just survived a collapsing ruin into it for you. There's no payment. They never give you anything. No money, no abilities, no gold, no new shoes, no answers, no nothing. It's just go get our golden gears, bitch.
Sons of bitches.
Like, that's just hit you up real hard. It's bullshit. But you do it. You give them their gears. And what happens? What's your reward? Go start the elevator for because we're too lazy to do it ourselves. You sons of bitches. That's the game. That's the first area of the game right there. Just go do our dirty work for us.
Oh, my Lord. But
I genuinely enjoyed playing it the entire time, even as I bitched and cursed and complained about every death, every stupid task they gave me to push the game along, you know, everything.
I like the visual style of it. It has like a hand-drawn kind of anime style to it, but like really bright and colorful, too.
I agree. The art style is pretty cool, and the deaths are pretty well animated. You have a standing still animation that's kind of reminiscent of Sonic the Hedgehog back when he used to do the foot tap. It's a genuinely nice game. I do wish there was music in the game outside of still scenes or some cutscenes, but I guess that's another style. You know, the companies like to do that where it's like, hey, we want you to hear birds chirping and walk. You know, the usual sounds that you would hear in a jungle, I guess. But I want music in my games. But I'm not going to hold that against these guys, because to do that against it would be to pretty much hold every game company accountable for not putting music in their games anymore.
True.
But the game itself is, I think, is a solid platformer, adventure platformer at $9.99.
I was going to say, for $10, what's your verdict on it? What do you think?
I'd buy it, especially if I'm jonesing for out of this world like antics.
Sounds good.
Or flashback, I guess, too.
Sounds good. Well, Pernell, it is always good having you on. We're going to have to get you on soon for the post E3 fantastical awesomeness that I'm excited to talk about later on this week.
Oh, I'd be game for that. Heck, to be perfectly honest, I'll probably learn half of it from you.
That would make a 4-person show.
That'd be fun.
That'd be hectic, yeah.
Oh, I've had bigger than that.
Yeah, we should invite Ludon.
That's what she said. Let me stop. But I will admit, though, just be prepared for old man bitchery, because I do that.
Get off my lawn, you sons of bitches.
That's okay. I'll be zoned out for like 20, 30 minutes while they talk about Nintendo stuff that happened. I don't give a shit.
Did a better job at fighting the double dipping. We didn't even know we were getting bent over to buy the same game twice.
I don't know. If you made it through the EA press conference, I think you can make it through anything.
Yeah, that one was rough.
That was bad, huh?
Only one game came out that I actually was interested in. We'll talk about that later.
I think there were two worth talking about, but we'll cover that clearly on our Thursday Friday episode. But Pernell, thank you as always. We're going to let you go have your dinner, so you have yourself a good one.
Thank you, sir. I wish you both the same. Have a wonderful evening. And CJ, don't go picking up any wooden nickels and then spending them on really cheap achievement-worthy games, okay?
It wasn't for achievements, thank you. I'm not going to play it at all.
Just for your shelf, even worse! Have a good night, guys.
Later. Oh, man. Well, I have one more game to talk about, and you're here, so you're staying here for this.
Fucking hell. How many games do you have?
This is the last one to talk about, you fucking whiner.
It's turned into so many games. I didn't expect all this.
Oh, bitch. Here's something fun. You heard about the whole Minecraft crossplay thing.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I saw about the Sony thing, too.
There's now talk that Gunscape from Blowfish Studio Games might be another game that might see crossplay between the Switch and the Xbox One.
That'd be pretty neat, too. I think it's awesome that Nintendo is actually going with it, unlike Sony over there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I'm sure we'll talk about that more in the next episode, but for the people not knowing what we're talking about, crossplay is coming to Minecraft across Xbox One, PCs, mobile, VR, and Nintendo Switch.
The weird thing is they didn't show like the Switch in the picture initially during the E3 press conference.
No, they showed it in the video. Like a Minecraft Switch.
Okay, I noticed that like at the end it just showed like Minecraft Xbox PC.
Yeah, they in the video talking about it, they had like a Switch built in Minecraft with the neon Joy-Con and everything. And I saw that. I'm like, wow, they specifically showed a Switch in the video. So that's really cool. But
hopefully more games do that.
Yeah, and go figure, PlayStation, they actively refused. They turned it down. So those bitches. But
next time Sony wants an update for Minecraft, we should just turn it down.
I wouldn't be shocked if Mojang started doing less and less for the PlayStation version, because pretty much every other version of the game is going to be the same.
Yeah, they're going to have to do more effort to keep the PlayStation 1 by itself and update it as well.
So they'll be like, go fuck yourself. Anyway, final game to talk about isn't on any console. It is called Dead Age, developed by Silent Dreams, published by Head Up Games. It released June 8th on iOS and Android for $2.99. It is also available on Steam for $14.99 if you want a bigger PC version. Just after the zombie outbreak, you are fortunate enough to join a group of survivors and hole up in their camp. That doesn't set you out of danger. Food supplies are running low, injured survivors must be tended to, and materials need to be scavenged to keep the camp intact. The zombie threat increases steadily, and gangs of hostile survivors keep you on the defensive. This is kind of like a mix between a survival game and an RPG. It has very much the survival trappings of you have to manage resources, you have to manage food, send people on like supply runs to either you could have them stand guard at the camp, otherwise you might have people like bust in and steal your shit. You could send them on missions to go scavenge for food, and then you'll get rations that way. You can have certain people create weapons or ammo or material, like equipment out of materials that you find. And all this stuff runs on like a day-to-day timer, where if you set someone to do something, they're done for that day.
Wow, lazy bums can only do one thing in a day.
Well, this way, you know, people could change. You could change what the cat just jumped on my desk and threw me off. You could change.
I heard the noise actually of the cat jumping.
What jobs people have from day to day. So if there's a guy who is the guard one day, but you need him because he has leveled up in an area to like create new bullets, you could pull him off of guard duty for that day and have someone else do it and have him make some shotgun shells or something. Battles in the game are like turn-based RPG. Like your characters are on one side, the zombies are on another. You tap attack, you tap if you just want to do melee or gun or whatever you have equipped, you pick the enemy, and then it just plays out like a normal RPG, which I thought was a a fun little twist and a lot better for a mobile game instead of trying to fuck around with like an on-screen analog stick and buttons. And because I, as much as I enjoy hack and slash games on my iPhone, they're, I need a controller for that shit.
Yeah.
So having turn-based RPG style battles works really well. My biggest issues with the game is that it started off fairly rough. It just kind of throws you into things, and they give you a slight tutorial, but it doesn't seem to cover enough, and the stuff it does cover, they dwell on too much. Like, there were times where I'm just like, come on, I don't need to hear for the fifth day in a row that I have low rations, because it's only me and one other person so far. You can't, you know, send other people to do shit until you have more people there.
Yeah.
So it's a very slow start to it, but once you get into it, the battles are fun and intense. Being able to craft all the different things in the game and find out different recipes that you can do, it's a really enjoyable game. For $3, I think it's definitely worth trying out, but be warned, it does start fairly slow. I can't really talk about the Steam version because I haven't played that one at all. $15, if it's basically the same as the mobile version, I think $15 is probably too steep. But for $3 on mobile, there's definitely worse things out there to spend money on. So I enjoyed it. And if you have $3 burn a hole in your iTunes account or your Google Wallet or whatever the fuck they use there, It's worth checking out.
I think it's like a wallet.
I give it a try. It's good.
For that price, it sounds a lot like a, you know what?
Yeah, fuck it. Why not?
Yep.
Yeah, fuck it. Why not?
Try it's generally go to that.
See, but the pricing structure on mobile is so much different than console and Steam.
It's really, I mean, it is weird, but still, if it's virtually the same game, then I don't see why it wouldn't be an issue.
I don't know if it is or not. But yeah, fuck it. For $3, fuck it, why not? There.
Noise.
So that is it for this episode. Thanks for hanging out through another review show. Definitely stick around for our next episode. We'll have our E3 wrap-up and all the big talk and details and news
and the long ass fucking episode that's gonna take forever.
Oh, hopefully God, it's, I don't have to work
that
one
day, because
that is,
if I do,
that's gonna be a fucking long one.
If I have to work that day, imagine starting at 10:30 and work, it'll be like 2 a.m finishing.
But for everyone else, enjoy your E3 week, enjoy all the news coming out and all the fun stuff, and if you watched any of this stuff on Mixer, enjoy your free Xbox shit too.
Although Mixer is complete garbage and kept freezing, so I had to switch to YouTube anyway.
Did you get your Mixer
not yet
grab bag or anything?
I don't know if I will, because I had to switch over. But well, I did watch it for like 20 minutes on there.
Well, you have the rest of the week to jump on and watch stuff as well.
Although I already own Rare Replay anyway.
Yeah, you get Rare Replay for free just by watching the Xbox conference on Mixer, as well as Last Station and No Time to Explain from Tiny
Bill. Final Station,
my bad.
Which I already own. And I already own No Time to Explain as well. But both of those Tiny Bill games I own on Steam, so it'd be nice to have them on Xbox too.
And then some other goodies here and there, like a skin in Minecraft and some kind of Hawken starter pack and just...
Yeah, a bunch of random weird stuff, like 3 loot boxes in Halo Wars 2 or whatever they call them.
Something like that. But until next time, thanks for hanging out. And CJ, any final words?
Man, I literally had some and then I lost them. So my final words is to go out there and find the final words.